Responding to the ESG agenda. Legal insights for boards. Rapidly developing legal and voluntary frameworks, stakeholder demands, and increasing environmental concerns all mean that ESG is fast becoming a top priority for businesses around the world. To the extent that they ever weren't, boards are now under a legal obligation to respond to certain aspects of the debate. So it's no longer a case of simply wanting to do the right thing. In certain areas, it's a question of being compelled to do so. The IPCC's recent report that climate change is widespread, rapid, and intensifying, and COP26 taking place in November 2021, are only likely to add further impetus to ESG-related policy responses. Welcome to the Better Boards podcast series. In this episode, I'm delighted to talk with Anna-Marie Slott and Bill Chalk, both from the global law firm Ashurst LLP. I'm Dr. Sabine Demkowski, founder and managing partner of Better Boards. We make the boards of the most ambitious organizations more effective. Our mission at Better Boards is to contribute to creating better boards. We do this by providing clients with an evidence-based approach for board evaluations and board development programs. To fulfill our mission, we give a voice to all who care about creating better boards. Anna-Marie and Will, thank you so much for contributing to the Better Boards podcast series. I know that you are very, very busy in preparing for COP26. So a special thank you for making the time to contribute.
Delighted to be here, Sabina.
From your perspective, what drives the focus on ESG?
So Anna-Marie, I'll go first on this. I guess it's really a myriad of different drivers, as I'm sure the audience is aware. So fundamentally, you've got this societal shift in expectations of businesses doing the right thing, not having necessarily done so in the past. And you've got a growing and increasingly urgent concerns about the future of the planet and its people, which have led to a greater interest from multiple different angles. Going back a number of years, I guess, you've got ESG-orientated interest from institutional investors attempting to minimize risk and also create opportunity and achieve operational improvement with a benefit to the environment or society and potentially to an organization's financial performance. But fast forward to where we are now, and in light of perceived lack of engagement with investee companies, which arguably in part contributed to the financial crisis, we now have what's a relatively new and improved UK stewardship code, which and becoming a signatory to that is not automatic. It's something that's assessed by the Financial Reporting Council based on submissions from asset managers, amongst others. And part of that vetting process by the FRC involves assessing not only the policies that the asset manager has for engagement, but the reality of that engagement. And very recently, one third of those that applied for signatory status didn't get it. So that's really driving an increased focus on ESG-related issues, amongst others, particularly from those that didn't make the grade. And I might suggest from some that did, but think they might have squeaked through. I guess two other things to mention from a sort of basic corporate perspective. You've got successive governments trying to restore trust in the way in which business is done. That's led to an ever-increasing number of disclosure requirements, not only for companies on public markets, but also for private companies. And I'm thinking of things like the Modern Slavery Act reporting, gender pay, energy efficiency, and in the not too distant future, making climate-related financial disclosures. But of course, underpinning all of this from a corporate perspective, you've got the duty of directors to promote the success of the company whilst taking everything relevant into account. So employees, other stakeholders, the communities in which businesses operate, their impact on the environment. And now, relatively recently, directors' obligations to report on an annual basis on how they discharge that duty. Disclosures are in a relative infancy, but they're also creating focus, not just from regulators. But then there's, of course, sustainable finance, which is Anna-Marie's world. Over to you, Anna-Marie.
Thanks, Will. Yeah, and so I think the world of finance is also a critical component for this and something that, you know, boards will be frequently focused on how they're obtaining their finance, how they're getting equity, how they're getting debt. But that whole world is now also looking through an ESG lens. And so you're seeing regulation in that context coming out from the EU, for example, sustainable finance directives that just kind of keep coming at pace. You're seeing focus from places like the UK, where the banks in particular are being subject to increasing regulation around climate risk. They all have to have a senior manager now who is quite high in the bank, addressing how the bank is responding to risk. And you see the whole financial ecosystem, I think, evolving to assess not only what was historically thought of as, you know, risk and credit risk, but also looking at what was, you know, previous externality, which is now being incorporated through the lens of ESG, to really put a broader scope on how the whole market views companies and their risk profile. So you're seeing that come through in both risk management and in reorientation of capital. There's definitely a plan within regulators to reorient capital towards a sustainable future coming from the EU. And you see the UK is also doing its own part in terms of creating a taxonomy around that, identifying what will qualify within that taxonomy as sustainable activities, which feeds through to how do they get financed, where do fund managers invest, you know, how do boards get evaluated on what they're doing and their access then to the markets.
What you are describing there is a myriad of influences contributing to the focus on ESG. When boards come to you, what are really the questions you get most frequently asked as lawyers?
Yeah, I think, look, a lot of people are really asking, where do we start? They're, you know, it's that question about, okay, I know I need to be doing something and I know it needs to be going on now, but I don't even know where I'm supposed to start looking. And so really it's about working with the clients to figure out, you know, where is your risk and what is the materiality, right? So some companies will have ad hoc programs that kind of look at this risk or that risk, but it's now coming together into a more holistic approach. The key is to look at, you know, what kind of risks are material to that industry, to that company, and set out, you know, the priorities around those risks and assess that. Now, you're going to get feedback anyway from your investors if you have investors in your company, and they're going to be asking you certain questions. That's certainly going to steer you into areas of materiality. There's this question that people are now talking about where you take into account issues from a materiality perspective financially and then from a materiality perspective on an ESG basis. So there's this phraseology going around double materiality. So looking at things through different lenses, how does that affect the company? And then, you know, we're really helping people to kind of map those against what are your legal obligations, the types of disclosure Will mentioned earlier. How do these risks set up against what you're saying and what you need to be saying? And then it's really, you know, once you prioritize that, it's about looking at where you are at the moment. You know, there are people at different parts of their path, right? But we have quite a lot of clients who know that it's part of their path. They're just trying to figure out where that path goes and how to start that process. I think maybe you can also add in some more details around that plan of attack that people are putting together.
Yeah. And
Well, it would be great if you could describe a bit, what does it really mean for an individual director? Because I can well imagine that our listeners are sitting there and wonder, well, what does it really mean for me at the end of the day?
Well, I think it might sound binary, but it goes back to that basic director's duty of acting with skill, care, and diligence. Therefore, takes you to making sure you fundamentally understand the issues and get the base level of knowledge that you need to address it, particularly from a chair's perspective or from the non-coms perspective, to the extent that one has such a committee, that they need to consider if they've got the right mix of skills and the qualifications and the expertise, whether around the board table or within the senior management, when it comes to actually addressing those issues. And if they haven't, how can they get them? Do they need to recruit, particularly boards in high-risk sectors, such as the extractive industries, given this particular thought? And then, of course, well, we'll come back to that, I would imagine. Just developing what Anna-Marie was talking about, I mean, some of the other issues to consider in starting out is watching out for those silos of ESG activities that aren't connected or integrated into strategic governance. And then, of course, moving on from that to set objectives and goals to start to move forward within a framework that clearly outlines where an organization's purpose meets its ESG priorities. And I know you've dealt with this in previous podcasts, Sabina, in terms of purpose. Some companies haven't got there yet, but actually may be the starting point for many people on this journey. And then moving on from that, developing the roadmap that flows from it. And I think ultimately the end of that journey, not to the extent you ever reach the end of it, you're then potentially in a position to report on what you've done relative to your legal obligations and otherwise. And to your question about individual accountability, it's important to remember that the quality of your reporting and that the statements you make, particularly as regards future intentions, have to be of the same quality as anything you might say in relation to the day-to-day performance of the business. In other words, be careful not to mislead, as for obvious reasons, as we've rehearsed already, these disclosures are coming under increasing stakeholder and regulatory scrutiny.
Let's make a jump after framing all these issues. Clearly, they're big, they're massive, they're an enormous challenge. And it is absolutely clear that something needs to be done. But where to start? I mean, that appears to be a key question here. And what does good really, really look like?
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, and it's a really hard question. Obviously, it have to be tailored to your organization, right? Your company. But what good really looks like, I think, in what we're seeing is, number one, proper engagement, right, across the organization. So leading from the top, right, but also working through cross-divisional groups, climate forums, to Will's point, not siloing ESG into one part of the organization, but really getting engagement across the management team in particular, but also into the board. So that is a key one, that proper engagement. And people approaches to that, climate champions, working groups, task forces, forums, engaging in particular the younger employees in the organization has been really helpful and in some ways quite useful, I think, for the companies that are doing it well, because they tend to have a real engagement on the topic. And then I think, if you were going to pick just a few things, I think the proper setting of targets is super important to what good looks like. And that's not targets for 2050. That's targets here and now in the short and the medium term that people can engage in. And depending on where you are, if you're at the beginning of the path, one of those targets is just to understand where you are, to get to the data that sets the baseline for you. And, to look at what that is, because it is not an easy task. It is actually kind of somewhat tedious task to get people to really give you the data so that you can set your targets, so that you understand what's achievable and what's ambitious and what is good.
And also kicking the tires on the integrity of that data to make sure that it is, decision useful, that it does bear close scrutiny. From my perspective, I suppose, what does good look like? It's also about, and Sabina, again, you'll be more paint conscious of this than in many ways we are, but creating time within the boardroom agenda, the ability to focus on these issues. And there's a recent study of the FTSE 250 of 120 companies within that constituency, over 50% of them now have additional committees, many of them ESG or ESG related and focused, just to try to create that, not so much time, but the actual focus within the boardroom agenda to develop these issues, but also in creating those committees, having also one eye on information flows within the governance structure to make sure that, for example, the risks that flow from proper evaluation of ESG issues then flow into where they need to within that governance structure, which is traditionally into one's audit and risk committee, for example.
Coming to another issue, COP26 is around the corner. We are recording this podcast literally a day before the start of COP26. What do you think? What can boards expect from COP26? And what should they be prepared to do in response?
Well, we will be there. We're going up by train, of course. I think you will see renewed targets. There's a lot of focus on people really wanting from the government's targets and roadmaps. There's a huge focus on actual roadmaps of how you get to it, and not just a hope that some fairy wand will wave along a new technology that's going to solve it all for us in 2049. So I think you'll see at least a real call for specificity, more specificity than there has been in the past. There's about, over 60% of the governments of the world have committed to some kind of net zero, but there is a very wide range of detail around those commitments. And I think the other thing that will be really interesting, I think this will really be a finance-focused COP, particularly with Mark Carney, particularly with the different people who are going to be there. So I think you will see more focus on how the world of finance, everything from, you know, direct lending all the way through to securitizations and derivatives and the whole underbelly of how a financial market works, you will see, I think, more focus on that. I think for boards, it's going to be really about starting to get serious about setting their own roadmaps and seeing what will happen, because these commitments that governments are making are ones that business has to deliver on. And I think best in class will get out there early, talk in their industries and figure out what they can deliver and how quickly, so that they can be driving the conversation as opposed to receiving the conversation from governments.
Fantastic. You know, when I observe boards, when I speak with boards, I mean, so some are a little bit in panic mode. There's a lot of pressure going on. Some boards did not start, others started and realized that maybe they haven't started at the right place and they couldn't make the progress they had hoped for. Coming to the end of this podcast, what are really the top three things our listeners should take away?
From my perspective, I think first, just don't rush that initial stage. As you've just said, there's no right or wrong answer here. And it may be cathartic to know that a lot of companies are struggling here. But that time spent undertaking the risk and materiality assessment, creating that framework and roadmap will pay dividends in the future. Get your foundations right.
Yeah, and then I think in building those foundations, kind of our second takeaway is probably to, you know, is that question around peer group analysis. So what is your particular industry? What is your particular company? Where is its pressure points, you know, and how different organizations, there's a lot of net zero alliances getting together now, you know, contributing to those actively and finding out what's being done in the market, I think is key.
And I think the final thing is that particularly with this, there's a huge focus on reporting, but just remembering that reporting obligations are the output of your work here and not the ultimate goal. And from a director's liability perspective, be careful about the statements of intention you make, particularly around things like net zero goals, for example. And be conscious that if your ability to meet those goals changes, considering whether you need to update your stakeholders accordingly.
Thank you so much, Anna-Marie and Will, for contributing. I know how difficult it was with COP26 around the corner, and you managed to get this recording into your diaries. So a huge thank you for that. I know that our loyal listeners will appreciate your thoughts and input. Thank you.
Thank you, Sabine.
How can we help you and your board? We at Better Boards are always delighted to hear from you. You can best reach us at info@better-boards.com. Thank you for listening.